Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So this evening I'll continue on the theme of the following the Anapanasati Sutta. I guess I started this 2 weeks ago. I gave a random talk at the beginning of the retreat about sitting meditation. Thought, oh well, I'll give a couple more about meditation, so we start the retreat and sort of got on to Anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing, and haven't really stopped. So just continuing this morning I spoke about the section on concentrating the mind, which is step number 11. Step number 12 is liberating the mind, breathe in, liberating the mind, breathe out. Or freeing the mind. The Pali word is vimoccayam. And the connotation is vimoccaya is a freeing, liberating, releasing. Releasing the mind, dropping things away from the mind. So that the idiom that's used more often is that freeing or liberating. And there are many ways of describing the freeing of the mind or releasing, letting go of certain things, but the one thing that is useful is the releasing of attachment, releasing of upadana, clinging attachment. And as this is tied to the breath, and as we sit in meditation, as one breathes in, really attending to that quality of releasing. So much of the meditation is, there is so much clinging involved, and not just without even going into the structures, but just the kind of hope or clinging that is involved in, trying to make the breath be a certain way. So that releasing the breath, beginning with that, just releasing the breath as one breathes in, to really release the breath, to drop away, to let the the kind of mind that is sort of desperately trying to control, to let that drop away, to release that. As one breathes out, to really let, just releasing, setting aside, putting down, that putting down the desire to control, to make it be, make things be the way one wants it, which we spend so much time in meditation, trying to make things be the way we want them to be, and we forget that that's not actually what Dhamma is about. And when we are practicing Dhamma, to really, really let things be the way they are, this is the way things are. This is the reality of this moment. This is the truth in this moment. To release into that truth. To release the kind of the preferences, the mind that is desiring, not desiring, becoming, trying to become something. The whole force of attachment and clinging is always going towards becoming, being, trying to make things be, trying to get them to become certain ways that we prefer, or trying to get away from the things that we don't want or don't like. So that releasing, freeing the mind from that tendency. As we breathe in, releasing, turning to a non-clinging in the present moment, as we breathe out, this. And it's not a matter of sort of practicing so that we can realize non-clinging, realize release sometime in the future, some other time. When I get this meditation down, then I'll figure out, I'll be able to experience release and non-clinging. It's applying it right now. Each breath, as we breathe in, this is the moment, this is the opportunity, this is the occasion, to apply that attitude, that effort that is not conditioned by that clinging, that attachment, being able to release that. So that this mindfulness of breathing is learning how to apply these principles, not sort of waiting for the result somehow, sometime in the future, some other time other than now. That as we, when we, because when we're, when there is this clinging attachment, inability to release, inability to free the mind, Then, of course, we create suffering, we create problems, we create difficulties for ourselves. And this is where the sort of problems and difficulties arise. And that's whether it's, in terms of the mindfulness of breathing in the present moment, having difficulties with it, not feeling one's getting it, or whether it's in terms of just living together as human beings, creating a life that is sort of smooth and harmonious, kind of hassle-free life. It all comes back to this point of release, releasing, putting down, setting aside that clinging and attachment. And it's really an action of the mind. And it's as we're sitting and practicing, meditating, really just to have that image in the mind of really releasing or letting go, putting down, dropping. One needs to, I mean, this, and this is obviously this is a culmination of having developed effort and balancing the faculties of tranquility and discernment. There's a gladdening of the mind. The mind is bright. So then, now as the mind is ready, then you're entering into that sphere of non-clinging, and the activity of non-clinging, and really to do it on a moment-to-moment basis as one's practicing, really visualize it, feel it, try to really feel as we breathe in, to just that sense of that releasing and non-clinging. As we breathe out, to really bring it onto an experiential level, the feeling, what's it like to breathe? And really release that quality of knowing, release the quality of awareness and attention, so that it isn't sticky, it isn't, there's this quality of, it's not getting stuck on anything, it's not being held by anything. And so one of the, sort of the image of course, of, clinging is always the hand that's grasping. And the, In Asia, one of the ways that you catch monkeys is by putting a coconut, and you hollow out a coconut, and then fix it to the ground really firmly, and then you put a hole in the coconut, just enough so that a monkey can put its hand through it, and then you put some food or some fruit inside, and what the monkey does is reach in, and it grabs the food, and then it can't get its hand back out again, and what will happen? As soon as it does that, the hunter's just sort of back behind the bushes watching. As soon as it notices that the monkey's sort of got its hand inside the coconut, it's grabbing onto the fruit. The hunter just goes and walks over and picks up the monkey, because the monkey just it'll see the hunter coming and it'll go, it's just like it wants to run away. It wants to, but it can't let go. It won't let go of that fruit. It won't drop it. It won't release it. And so you end up with monkey soup. And that's, that's so much what we do. I mean, it isn't as if, we can't let go of our attachments and desires and our various focuses for clinging. It isn't as if they are attached to us. We attach to them. We attach to them. And there's different the classical forms of focuses of grasping that the Buddha points out, clinging to sensuality, clinging to views, clinging to precepts and practices, clinging to the to self-belief. These aren't things that are inherent in the mind. They're not things that are inherent in human existence. They're things that we attach to. They're things that we cling to. They're things that we create a bond with, and we hold on to them, and we don't release them. So to be attentive to release, to making that conscious, releasing, freeing the mind from its tendency to hold on to, just like with sensuality. We're not diminished beings if we don't get what we want, that we think get what we think is going to gratify us, satisfy us, and it doesn't even they're just sort of the things that we look forward to so much, that we invest so much energy in trying to get. They're just sort of kind of wispy memories after a while, and there's not really they don't even and it doesn't have the same satisfaction at all. I mean, it's like it's like when you're hungry and you go into the kitchen or into the house, it's in the morning, and you can smell, the smells of cooking are going on, and it's just so, wow, I wonder what's for the meal today. Boy, that smells good. Wow, can't wait to the meal. And then you have the meal, and there's varying degrees of excitement and gratification. And then, after the meal, you walk into the house, or you walk in and there's the smells of food, and you, oh, gee, smells awful in here. Light some incense, open the windows, get the smell out of here. what was so alluring is just sort of like a wispy passing thing that isn't really, we're on to the next thing already. So that to notice when the mind is attaching onto an object, and just turn attention to release, turn attention to freeing the mind. sensuality in particular, that is to recognize its drawback, to recognize its limitation. The Buddha compares it to the the dog that is just waiting by the butcher's, the butcher's apprentice, and it's just waiting. You can imagine the fantasies going on in the dog's mind, and all the butcher does is throw these bones with a little bit of blood pasted on it is all. It's nothing much there at all. And the dog sort of jumps on that bone and gnaws away at it, and all it gets is tiredness and nothing, not much satisfaction at all. And that's that's the story of our lives, isn't it? It seemed like it was going to be so good, and it never quite lives up to the advertising that the mind conjures up, and the problem isn't that there isn't pleasure involved in things. The problem is the clinging. The problem is that grasping, that attachment, the expectation that's formed, and the inability to release it, the inability to put it down, to just let it be this is what it is. This is what the experience is right now. So to be working with that, as the breath comes in, as the breath goes out, recognizing when there is that the draw, the attraction to sensuality. This sort of seeing, how can I release around that? How can I put that down? How can I let that go? How can I not be drawn into? Letting the mind open around it. And it's not getting caught by it. The attachment to views. Attachment to views, opinions, and there's the problematic nature of views that are, by the content of the views, in that we hold a view that draws us into beliefs that are unrealistic, ungrounded in reality, have detrimental results. Living from the base, say the base baseline view of, there's no. As I say, the traditional formulation of wrong view. There's no there's no results of giving. There's no results of good action. There's no results from unskillful action. When one holds that view, There's a you know, the result is one of not having a sense of a clear sense of conscience and fear of wrongdoing, and then because the Buddha is from the Buddhist perspective, this is fundamental that there are results of actions. Those things which are skillful and wholesome bring about wholesome results, and those things which are unskillful and wholesome bring about unwholesome results, unpleasant results. Or that, you know, there's no and all the rest of the formulations of say of right and wrong view are really around that, around the results of actions, and because they're extrapolations or they're implied within that. Once you start recognizing that as how the world functions, then you sort of realize, well, there, you know, there are there is mother and father, and that's it. We have a particular relationship with certain beings. There are there is this life and the next life. There is rebirth. There are other realms. There are beings who are liberated. That is a possibility. So that too, when we hold the view that that doesn't exist, then that sets a, and there's no, it sets a course in our life to be, you know, doing that which is unskillful, and then reaping the results of that, or living from a perspective of, you know, the very materialistic view. It's a view that you know, I just need to get what I can this lifetime, as much as I can, gratify myself as much as possible, because there's nothing after this anyway. So that, I mean, that creates a very miserable existence. So many views of the say from the time at the time of the Buddha. There's the in particular, you know, materialistic views, nihilistic views, and you know they're just as common today as they were in the time of the Buddha. Another aspect of views is say the problematic nature of views. When we hold to them, we cling to them. Is the contentious nature of views. When we hold a particular view, then we exclude others, and then we end up contending and in conflict. Because of the particular views we hold, and, you know, and because when we hold a view, then it's just, you know, I'm right, everything else is wrong. This is the right way to do things. That is wrong. Other people are wrong. And that so that 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 clinging to views, holding to views, you know, creates this conflict and tension, because we, in order to do that, we have to prop that up and hold that up, and it's a you know, it's being held up in the face of conflicting evidence that it may be wrong, so that we have to put more effort into holding it up and clinging. So there's tension in the mind, there's suffering in the mind, to be able to put that down, putting down the views that we hold, the opinions that we then sort of either cling to and hold as this is right, or this is the way it is, and spend our time either trying to prop those up or forcing them onto other people, then it just is very wearisome. Being able to recognize within the mind when we're holding to a particular view, holding to a particular opinion. And you see how much conflict arises in our own mind and within our relationship with other people, that so holding people to and situations to particular standards of how one thinks it should be. If this were right, this is how it would be. If these people would only do things right, then I'd be happy. If only this monastery would practice in the right way, then I'd be enlightened. I'd be happy. And there just isn't. There isn't such a place. But the view is very attractive, isn't it? If we can just get everybody to line up, do everything right, then we'd all be happy. Of course, everybody's got a different view of what things are right. So there isn't a solution to that. It's inherently problematic. So that the Buddha said this releasing the clinging, putting down the opinions, putting down the views, putting down the attachments. And that's the only place where we can find peace. An attachment to precepts and practices, the expectation of purification through doing things in a particular way, whether it's to the extreme as I think of the time of the Buddha, the weird and wonderful practices that they used to do, and well, probably still do in India. There's one discourse where these two ascetics come to visit the Buddha, and one of them does the dog practice and the ascetic practice of doing all his conduct is like a dog. And another one is the cow practitioner. It does everything like a cow. Imitates these are ascetic practices that they really sort of curl up. Really going up to visiting the Buddha and paying homage and then sort of curling up like a dog at his put his feet, sort of licking himself, and that They did these things with the belief that just following as much as possible, that there's this kind of a practice, this kind of a way of action, that it would by doing that, then this would, was an ascetic purification, tapas, and would bring about rebirth in heaven, a heavenly rebirth. And the Buddha didn't really concur with that. He said, "Well," and he would. They asked him, "What would be the result of this perfecting this practice?" And the Buddha didn't want to answer until he was pressed. And finally, he said, "Well, it's it's one of two results. Either one's reborn as a dog by perfecting that action and imitating that action, or one's reborn in a hell realm, just because of the delusion and ignorance that is so firmly rooted. And, at best, one gets reborn as a dog." So that clinging that this precept and practice, the attachment to the precept and practice. And purification comes through keeping this particular set of rules, this particular set of ways of doing it. And one can do that with mindfulness of breathing as well. If I just sit here and watch this breath come in and watch it go out, and make that breath perfect. Somehow it's going to make me liberated. I don't know how, but somehow it's going to do it. If I just do it enough. And that it's not true. It has to have. This is that's an attachment. And the thing is, they say relinquishing attachment doesn't mean relinquishing the actual practice and training. It's approaching it with wisdom and understanding, using it so that it's freeing oneself from attachment and clinging. The developing of all these the nuances of this practice and training, so that it's one's cultivating those balances of discernment and faith, the balances of energy and tranquility, the balances of attending wisely to the breath. And of course, with that attending wisely comes this release, this relinquishing, this letting go, dropping of attachment, dropping of the clinging and the object of clinging. The last form of upadana, of attachment, is the attachment to the views of self, self-view. And it's important to note that it's not, it's atavad upadana. And the upadana being the clinging to the atta is a self, vada is being view, belief. Because it's only the belief in self. The self in its strictest sense just does not. It didn't exist in the first place, so that one can't really relinquish it. You can't say let go of something that isn't there in the first place. But the belief in its existence is what we get hooked by. And we get hooked by the belief in that the reality, the kind of tangibility that somehow there is a me, I am this, I am my body, I am my feelings, I am these perceptions, and mental constructs, and consciousness. I'm something. I am, and that feeling of I am permeates, and even to say that the subtle feelings of consciousness. This is what I am. And there's a certain level of fear of, well, if I'm not that, I must be nothing, which is another sort of belief, isn't it? So that what the Buddha is always pointing to so this is what is. There is the experience of the body, there is the experience of the breath, there is the feeling tone, there this is, there is perception there. There is the mental constructs which are either wholesome, unwholesome, whether wise or deluded. Whether exalted or mundane. But you know, they are thoughts, mental constructs, it's consciousness, knowing. And all of that is arising and ceasing. That we don't have to prop up a... Again, it's where we get hooked and we get stuck and we get... These are the kind of hooks that keep dragging us back into suffering. When we can allow the release, freeing the mind, I breathe in, freeing the mind, I breathe out. Freeing it from that compulsion to have to prop up a sense of I, of me, of mine. We have to formulate that idea. And we do it habitually, so it seems real enough. But as we investigate more and more deeply, more clearly, more attentively, we start recognizing that no, that's a complete addition. And it's what constellates this. It gives a sort of a crystal to form the sort of the different nuances of suffering around it, all the different. It's like the sun having all the planets and asteroids all sort of revolving around it. It's all this happening, and then that center of it is this belief in self, in self view. This is the core that creates the gravitational sphere that it all revolves around. That to allow to release that, to free that, allow that to not formulate, to not create this, not buy into the gravitational pull of it. So that the sense of attending to release, attending to freeing the mind, or attending to putting down the clinging, relinquishing, rather than holding things with that sort of that fist of the. That, like the monkey that can't let go, this just opening, and really have working with that image in the mind as we breathe in, as we breathe out, really just opening the heart with that, opening that heart of awareness so that it's not. And you see that what there's, it's so much more peaceful, so much more satisfying, that driving to make the practice work, driving to make our desires satisfying, driving to make the world conform to my views and opinions of how I think it should be, and to make everything work according to me and my so it's just that simple act of release. There's this tremendous implications, and it's something that's very difficult to do. And we're so used to clinging, and it's the sustenance that feeds us. It's like that's one of the alternate translations of clinging is also this sense of sustenance. This is what feeds us. We feed off of suffering. We feed off of clinging. Our suffering and is fed and sustained by clinging, attachment, upadana. So that to this sense of to not be feeding that heart of attachment, not sustaining, giving sustenance to the ways we suffer. And it's just this releasing, releasing, to putting it down, not picking it up and holding it. So I'll offer that for reflection this evening.